Next section, calculating the benefits to be reported. Sections A to E of the P11D. As we start this part of the P11D exercise, we must bear in mind the differences between the brown boxes on the P11D, which signify a Class 1A National Insurance Contributions liability, and the blue boxes. As always, I recommend that you have a copy of the HMRC CWG5 booklet handy, where you can then refer to its Appendix 1 Common Benefits. This will help you decide where on the P11D any particular item should be reported, if it is not immediately obvious. HMRC also provides 6 P11D working sheets to help you calculate the amount to be reported, and as I go through the sections of the P11D where these are available, I will tell you about them. The first section to be considered on the P11Ds is Section A, Assets Transferred, and in brackets it shows cars, property, goods or other assets. This is a brown box section where we have to report the market value of any company asset transferred to a director or employee. The general rule applies if the asset sold or transferred was a car or any other asset that had never been used to provide a benefit. Employers sometimes get this wrong, either failing to report anything or by using the book value of, say, a company car, which is probably lower than the market value and therefore incorrect. If the company asset was previously made available as a benefit in kind, perhaps a home entertainment package, but we could be talking about more expensive items like company boats and planes, the cash equivalent will instead be the higher of the market value of the asset at the date of transfer, or the market value of the asset when first provided as a benefit to the employee, and then less any sums already taxed on the use of the asset. Let me give you a simple example. An asset that originally cost £1,000, perhaps a painting, would have been taxed for the first year of use at 20%. In other words, £200 benefit, leaving a net value of £800. And if the employee then bought that asset and it was only worth, say, £500, the employee would still be taxed at the net value of £800 because of anti-avoidance measures in the legislation. The next section on the P11D is Section B for payments made on behalf of the employee. This is a blue box section where we must report any payments made by the employer on behalf of the employee, and also the amount of any tax deductible on notional payments not immediately borne by the director or employee and not made good within 90 days of the receipt of each notional payment. This might happen where a director or employee does not have sufficient cash pay to allow the employer to recover the tax due on the exercise of some unapproved share options. The legislation requires that pay-as-you-earn should have been applied to any employment income provided in the form of a cash voucher or readily convertible asset, or vouchers and credit card tokens used to acquire such assets, or if they are readily convertible themselves. The legislation then provides that the employees have to make good any tax deducted within the 90-day period. The next section on the P11D is Section C, headed Vouchers and Credit Cards. This is a blue box section where we have to report any expense incurred in the provision of vouchers which are capable of being exchanged for money, goods or services, and also any additional expenses incurred in providing the particular benefit. We should report details of all expenses and any other payments made using credit cards or tokens, excluding any amounts reported elsewhere as entertaining, travel, subsistence, etc., and excluding anything related to car benefits which are reported at Section F of the P11D. We should also exclude the value of any vouchers to which pay-as-you-earn was applied, for example, maybe luncheon vouchers, where the excess over the 15 pence per day exempt amount is put through the payroll. It should be remembered that vouchers are liable to Class 1 National Insurance Contributions, which is why it is in a blue box section. The Class 1 NIC should have been paid by the 19th or 22nd April 2011 payment deadline. There is no need to report the first £55 per week or £243 per month of any qualifying childcare vouchers that were provided by the employer. If more than the exempt amount was given to employees, say £60 per week instead of 55, the excess of £260 for the year would be reported you at Section C. The excess should have gone through the payroll to recover Class 1 NICs. The next section on the P11D is Section D, headed Live-in Accommodation. This is a brown box section attracting Class 1A NICs, and we have P11D Working Sheet 1 available to assist with the calculation of the cash equivalent of the benefit. We start with a basic charge, which is based on the greater of the annual value of the property, often known as the gross rateable value, or the amount of rent paid by the employer. And from that, we must deduct any rent paid by the employee. The net benefit is reported. The benefit is adjusted on a pro rata basis if the accommodation was only available for part of the year. We then have the additional charge, which only applies to property costing more than £75,000. That £75,000 figure must take into account the cost of any improvements, but these are only counted from the tax year following the year in which the expenditure was incurred. This means that any expenditure incurred in 2010-11 will not count, but any expenditure incurred up to the 5th of April 2010 will have to be added to the original cost or market value. When the cost of the accommodation, including any improvements, exceeds that £75,000 limit, the excess over £75,000 has to be converted into an annual rent by multiplying the excess by the official rate of interest that applied at the start of the tax year. And at the 6th of April 2010, that was 4%. Whenever dealing with living accommodation, we have to consider whether the occupation by an employee is job-related and potentially exempt. This could be a house or flat occupied by a school caretaker or by the porter or security man in a block of flats. If the exemption applies, the benefit does not have to be reported. There are three legs to the exemption, and the first is where it is necessary for the proper performance of the employee's duties that he or she should reside in the accommodation. Typically, this will include the school caretaker. Secondly, we have an exemption where the property is provided for the better performance of the duties, and it is customary for employers to provide accommodation in that particular industry. Thirdly, we have an exemption that applies where there is a special threat to the employee's security and special security arrangements are in force, and therefore the employee resides in the accommodation as part of those security arrangements. The third exemption for security is the only one that can apply to a director. Any director in job-related accommodation will not be able to have use of the exemption if it falls within the first or second sections. Now, when dealing with accommodation benefit, we mustn't overlook the additional benefits that might arise, which are linked to the exempt accommodation. To begin with, this could be the use of furniture and fittings, costs of light and heat or repairs and decoration which are met by the employer. Where the occupation of the property is exempt, the payment of the council tax and any water rates by the employer is not a taxable benefit. The next section on the P11D is Section E, which is headed Mileage Allowance Payments and Passenger Payments. This is a blue box section, and we have P11D Working Sheet number 6, which is available to help with the calculations. Here we have to report any excess over and above the authorised or approved mileage allowance payments, where the rates up until the 5th of April 2011 were 40p per mile for the first 10,000 business miles and 25p per mile for any additional business mileage. Please remember that the increase to 45p is only effective from the 6th of April 2011 and has no effect on the P11Ds we're considering. For mileage allowance payments, the approved amount is the number of business miles travelled multiplied by the appropriate rate or rates for the kind of vehicle used. The question we need to ask is whether or not the employer has a system in place to check if any director or employee actually exceeded the tax relief available, which could happen either because they drove more than 10,000 business miles and were reimbursed at the 40p rate for all mileage, or it could be because of increases in fuel prices that the employer decided to pay more than the 40p and 25p rates. If there were any excess payments, they have to be reported here at Section E of the P11D. For Class 1 national insurance purposes, the rules are somewhat different, and we have a description of relevant motoring expenses. And basically what this means is that there is no liability to Class 1 NICs, even if all the mileage was reimbursed at the higher 40 pence per mile rate. If it was reimbursed at a higher rate, say 50p per mile, the excess of 10p would be liable to Class 1 NIC as well. Also within this section, we potentially have payments made for passengers travelling in a car or van. There is an approved passenger payment amount, which is 5p per mile per passenger when they are necessarily travelling on company business. And this can be in a company car or van or in the employee's car or van.